Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming over here to this elective. What I have to say today could easily save your life. I'm going to talk to you today about how to make yourself stroke safe, but not only how to make yourself stroke safe, how to recognise the signs and symptoms of stroke in other people so that you may be able to save their lives as well. I am an ambassador, we call a stroke ambassador, for the National Stroke Foundation. There's nothing spiritual in this today. Somebody said to me earlier this morning, you know, are you talking about how to stroke your way to heaven or something? And I said, no, nothing like that. So just how to be stroke safe. So Simon Manchester and Murray have far better input into your spiritual life this weekend than I do. So, but I'm hoping that today you will go away remembering the important points from today's presentation. As I said, I am from the National Stroke Foundation, and the aim of the Stroke Foundation is fourfold: prevent strokes, save lives, enhance recovery, and fund research. So there's those four, the four points. But I want to talk to you today, firstly, about what is a stroke. Now, it says one in four people will have a stroke in their lifetime globally. So there's what, two, four, maybe 50 people here today. So say 48, just for a nice round numbers of four. 12 people in this room are in danger of having a stroke. And I shall talk about that as we go through. And it says there that 27,000 and all that strokes will be experienced by Australians. And that was in the 2019 to 2020 year. It is more than that now. It is actually about 29,000 people will have a stroke in Australia every year. All right. Most people know that a stroke is something up in the head. It's a blood somewhere in the head. And yes, that narrows the field immensely. But there are actually three types of stroke. And I will talk about two here, and I'll talk about the third one in a minute. So there is, first of all, there is what's known as an ischemic stroke, which is caused by a clot that has broken off somewhere in the body. And it can be from a number of causes, a number of reasons. People who have surgery, one of the problems they face post-surgery is that there's a possibility of a little tiny bit of fat from our body has got in from the cut, from the surgery, has got into the bloodstream, and it travels through the bloodstream as well. Or the older we get, the more plaque we are developing, we are laying down on the lining of our blood vessels. And that's from our cholesterol is a big contributor to that. And as the plaque thickens and thickens, sometimes bits of that will flake off and it'll float through the bloodstream as well. Most times, they won't come to any harm. They will just float around and maybe get caught somewhere else on another little bit of plaque, and it never causes any problems. Where it causes a problem is when it gets into the very, very fine capillaries of our blood system. Our blood vessels get smaller and smaller and smaller as they develop into our brain, to the tips of our fingers and into our lungs and so on. And it's when they get to the parts of the blood vessels that are bigger than the size of the clot or that piece of rubbish that's floating through our blood system, that's when they block it off. And what they do, they stop the blood flow to the tissues that are immediately after that blockage. And if it's in the heart, it will cause a heart attack. If it's in the brain, it will cause a brain attack. It is the same principle as a heart attack. In the brain, we call it an ischemic stroke. Ischemic is just a fancy medical word that means loss of blood supply. And it has been known in research that the A piece of brain will die the size of the tip of your finger, about the size of a pea, will die within about 5 or 6 minutes if that blood supply is blocked off. And then it's an exponential death where beyond that it's blocked off, and then so on and so forth. And so it can cause quite a significant damage, and it causes death of tissue. In the other one that we have here, the hemorrhagic stroke, that is where there's a weakening in the wall of the blood vessel, and sometimes it will bulge out a bit like a bubble on your tyre. You know how when sometimes you'll get a bubble on your tyre and all of a sudden, bang, it's a blowout. It's the same principle, that this weakening in the blood vessel, this weak spot, will bulge and bulge, and we can be doing something which just raises our blood pressure a bit. And or we have high blood pressure, that's another problem, and that little blood vessel will burst, and the blood escapes from the blood vessel into the tissue round about it. Now, blood in the blood vessel is the right place. That's where it's supposed to be. Blood in the tissue works as an irritant. It's like if you splash bleach on your skin, it will burn if you don't wash it off. And the same thing with blood outside the blood vessel. It starts to work like a chemical reaction on the tissues. And it also means that the blood supply is cut off as well. Think about your garden hose. If you stand, you're out watering the garden, and you inadvertently stand on the hose, or you pull it and it kinks, the water supply is stopped off. The tap is still pushing the water in, but it's not going anywhere. And that's what happens when you have a clot, same principle. Or you have a split in the hose, tiny little pinprick, and the water starts shooting out through that hole in the hose. That's the same thing as the hemorrhagic stroke. My mother had a ischemic stroke, the one on the left, when she was 80 years old. My daughter had a, mother had a hemorrhagic clot. My daughter had the ischemic clot when she was 32. Wow. So people are not immune because they are young. In fact, there are documented case studies now that are appearing in respected medical journals of babies that are being born who have had a stroke while still in the womb. And because they're so young, and a stroke's the last thing that you suspect, it takes much longer to diagnose for diagnosing babies. So the impact of a stroke depends on the part of the brain that it has occurred in. Now, just quickly through this one here, the various colours of the brain there, that's not what it really looks like. Our brain is actually grey matter. But the colours show you the different lobes of the brain, and the various lobes have different tasks. Some is responsible for our feelings, for our emotions. Some are responsible for our vision. Some are responsible for our hearing, and so on, our movement. So wherever the damage occurs in the brain is what governs the degree of disability that the person might suffer. So there are a few there, and there's a few more here in this one. If you want to have a look at those two slides later, just out of interest, you're most welcome to. But first of all, how do you recognise the signs of stroke? Well, we have developed a very quick mnemonic. Senile decay tells me I'm forgetting things. All right, the first one is F for face. And usually that's the first thing that you can suspect, that there's something going wrong, that their face droops. And if you feel that this is a problem that you've got, you think, I can't smile. But if you go to a doctor, the doctor will ask you to smile. And a person who's having a stroke on their face, they will not be able to smile equally. It'll be one side will smile beautifully, the other side won't. And they won't be able to grit their teeth either like that. So F for face, so some sort of irregularity in the face. Arms, can they lift both arms? Now, when I say lift both arms, I don't mean just doing this, because we have sort of muscles, it's called the shoulder girdle, that we can actually manipulate to a certain extent to lift our arms. I mean they've got to be able to lift their arms like this, or they've got to be able to grip your hands equally so they're both the same. There was a young man who's about 18. He was a carpenter's apprentice. They were at morning tea, and he had put his coffee cup down on the ground, and when the whistle went to go back to work, he leaned over to get his coffee cup, and he grabbed it, and it fell out of his hand. And his mate said, "Oh, gee, mate, must have had a good old party last night. You're still hungover." But it wasn't. They soon realised there was something wrong with him. And at 18, he was having a stroke. They got him to hospital quickly, and I'm glad to say that he has recovered. He has not recovered sufficiently to be able to go back to work as a carpenter, but he is now a speaker for the Stroke Foundation as well. Is their speech slurred? Can they understand you? Can they answer questions logically? I was in a conference in Korea some time ago now, and it was the conference of the Baptist World Alliance, so I was there as a church representative, not as a nurse. And somebody came to me and said, "Oh, can you come and see Bill?" Bill was from Australia. I won't tell you who he was. I said, "What's wrong with Bill?" And they said, "He's talking rubbish." And I immediately thought, stroke. So I went to Bill and I said to Bill, "Can you smile for me?" And he smiled quite nicely. Okay. Then I asked him to squeeze my hands. One grip was weaker than the other. And his speech was okay. He was the sort of person who ummed and ahed a fair bit anyway in his normal speech. But then I said to him, "Do you know where we are, Bill?" Now, we were in Korea, okay, in Seoul, in a hotel there. And he said, "We're in Melbourne." And I said, "Okay, who's the Prime Minister of Australia?" Now, back then I think it was, I don't know, Bob Hawke or Paul Keating or someone like that. And he said, "Oh, it's Bob Menzies." So then I asked him to do a couple of other things that demonstrated he was having a stroke. We got him to hospital, and I have to say I could thoroughly recommend the Korean hospital system, the health system. They were brilliant. You just got to have your own interpreter, that's all. So I'm getting a bit dry, so let me have a drink here. So it's S for speech, F for face, S for speech, and T for time. Time is of the essence. If you see these sort of thing in sort of symptoms in anybody, don't take them to a doctor. Get them to hospital. I was giving this presentation one day, and a man came up to me afterwards. He had a wheelie walker, and I had emphasised this. Call an ambulance, get the ambulance to hospital. If you thought a person was having a heart attack, you'd get them to hospital, wouldn't you? You wouldn't muck around. Same thing with stroke, it's the same urgency. This man was driving his car, he and his wife were out somewhere, and he suddenly said to his wife, "I can't touch the pedals." He could not move his legs, and he's driving the car. She had the forethought to just put the handbrake on slowly, steer the car to the side of the road, and she got him. She doesn't know how she did it. She got him from the driver's seat into her seat, and she drove. And she said, "Oh, look, I'll take you to the doctor. He's just around the corner." They went to the doctor. The doctor said, "Nah, mate, you need to get, I'm going to call an ambulance, get you to hospital." And he said, "It's fine. My wife can drive me." So I got in the car, got to the hospital, and she did not think to say to the triage nurse, "My husband is having a stroke." She said, "My husband can't move his legs." And the triage nurse wasn't on the ball enough to be able to think, why can't he move his legs? That's a danger. By the time, from the time between when he had his complaint sitting in the car to when the doctor saw him in the emergency department was about 2.5 hours, way out the time limit. There is a time limit to get to hospital. Don't muck around. Call an ambulance. Okay? So, FAST, and if you have a look on my stand over in the hall over there, down the bottom on the right, amongst past all the mission stands, you will find all the literature there that's got FAST on it. So that's what we want you to do. Think fast. Third, I said that there were three types of stroke. The third stroke is what's called an ischemic attack, or a TIA. TIA stands for transient ischemic attack. And these transient ischemic attacks, a TIA, are far more dangerous than the strokes, either of the two strokes, because people ignore them. It's called transient because the symptoms will disappear in a few hours. My friend and her husband were travelling around the Northern Territory, and they'd gone to the Litchfield National Park. Anyone been to Litchfield? The beautiful swimming holes, yes. They were in one of the swimming holes having a wonderful time, and it was the middle of the week, so there weren't a lot of tourists around, unfortunately. He's out in the middle of the pond, and she said, oh, I feel strange. And she says, well, get out. Don't sit there, get out. She got him to the edge of the pool, because there's no steps around those places. They're all just rocks. She got him out. She doesn't know how she got him out. And she was trying to get him dressed and put his shoes on. And he's saying, they're not my shoes. And saying, yes, they are. They're your shoes. Anyway, got him to the car. And because Litchfield is about, 4.5 hours from Darwin, she did it in about 3 hours. Couldn't find the police car to save her life on the way. So she broke all speed records getting to the Royal Darwin Hospital. By the time they got to Darwin Hospital, all the symptoms had disappeared. And they did all sorts of tests on him and could not find a thing. That's the danger with TIAs. And we found out later that my mother had been having TIAs for quite some time, and they are a forerunner. They are a warning sign that a major stroke could happen. Doesn't say it's going to. It could happen. And if you think you've ever had a TIA, go to your GP and ask him to make sure that it wasn't that. They did all sorts of tests, and he has fully recovered, and he's being checked regularly by his GP. So my mum had a stroke at 80. My daughter had a stroke at 31. My dog had a stroke, and I did not realise it. Daisy, are you listening to this?
She's gone asleep.
I have a master's degree in critical care nursing, and I majored in things to do with the head. So this is my bag, as it were, my forte. The dog came out displaying all these strange symptoms, and on a Sunday rang the vet thinking, oh, dollars, you know. Got to the vets, and as soon as the vet saw her, he said, she's had a stroke. And I thought, you dumb klutz, of course she's had a stroke. It was all the same symptoms. She was paralysed on one side. Her face was drooping on one side. Her eyes were twitching. Glad to say she survived, because we fed her by the teaspoon for the next 3 weeks, and she survived. I don't know whether you remember Ziffy. That was her. No, Sasha. Sasha.
Oh, Sasha, yes.
Sasha.
I remember Sasha.
So, if you suspect a stroke, if you think it's just a TIA, don't hesitate. Get to hospital. It happens when the blood supply is blocked temporarily. So there are five things that you cannot do anything about that will increase your stroke risk. And one, everybody, I hate to say it, the older you get, the higher our stroke risk is. The second one is men. I don't know why, but men seem to have a higher propensity for strokes than women do. It may be, I asked this once in a Stroke Foundation lecture, and they said possibly because men, and doesn't apply here, of course, but men tend to drink more alcohol than women do, and they have a higher risk of diabetes and high blood pressure because of it. So it's our age. If you're male, people who have the darker skin, the darker pigmentation in their skin, like Aboriginals, Torres Strait Islanders, Caribbean, African people, they have a higher risk of stroke. If you have had a previous stroke, you have a higher risk of stroke, again on top of that. And there is a cardiac condition called atrial fibrillation, which can predispose towards stroke. But if you're under your treatment by your GP for your AF, then you don't have to worry about it. But as it says at the bottom, more than 80% of strokes can be prevented. How do we do that? Make time for a health check. And it's fortunate that the older we get, the more we realised how fragile life is and how we have to protect what we have. It would be good if people who are younger, in their teens or their early 20s, could develop the habit of having a regular check. But unfortunately, they don't, because young people think that they're
10-foot tall and bulletproof.
Absolutely. 10-foot tall and bulletproof, says Jack. All right. So, two things you can do. Know your numbers, it says. Know what your blood pressure is. Who knows what their blood pressure is? Anybody? And I am offering today, I didn't bring it with me, I have to do it over in the hall over there. I've got two blood pressure machines. And if you want to have your blood pressure checked, come and see me afterwards, after the 4 o'clock session, because I'll be here with the second one. Know what your blood pressure is, know what your cholesterol is, and try to work with your GP to keep them within reasonable range of numbers. Whatever your GP is aiming for, work with it. Some people, and my blood pressure is normally about 130 on about 60, which is disgustingly normal. Sometimes I'll get to the GP and I've been running around like a chook with its head off, and my blood pressure will be 145, and she'll get all excited. Oh, your blood pressure's too high. So to pick your time when you go to your GP. So know your blood pressure, know your cholesterol, get it checked regularly. And I mean at least once a year, every 6 months, the older we get. Stay on top of type 2 diabetes. Older people have a much higher propensity for developing diabetic type 2 symptoms. It's because of our lifestyle, because we all tend to put weight on the older we get and so on. And it's those sort of things that predispose to type 2 diabetes. And for atrial fibrillation, check with... Atrial fibrillation is that disease, that condition where we've got four chambers in the heart, and the electrical impulse comes from the brain to make the top chambers, the atrium, to make them contract, and then they push the blood through to the bottom chambers, and the bottom chambers then contract and push the blood out into the general system. Sometimes when atrial fibrillation, that electrical impulse to the top chambers gets out of whack, and they'd sort of beat all over the place, and the message doesn't get through to the bottom chambers. And the bottom chambers then have to try and work by themselves. So your GP can diagnose it, get your ECG regularly, and your GP can diagnose it, and they have drugs for it as well. So Secondly, eat well. And we hear this all the time, don't we? Eat well, eat well. I think most of us tend to be a little bit past having regular fast foods, which is great. I used to work with a nurse one day who said, I was in charge that day, and he came, he said, "Lorraine, I've got to go home." He said, "I've got a thumping headache." And I said to him, "What's your blood pressure?" He said, I haven't taken it. I took his blood pressure. It was off the charts. And I said to him, "You have to get home now and go and see your doctor before you have a stroke." He did, but I discovered that he and his wife, they didn't have any kids. They both worked full time. They lived on fast foods. As I said to him, I said, "What's for dinner tonight?" He said, "Oh, it's Tuesday. I think it's pizza." I said, "Oh, you have pizza every Tuesday." He said, "Yeah, pizza on Tuesday, hamburgers Wednesday, something else on Thursday." They had takeaway every night of the week because they were so busy, they didn't want to cook food. So fresh food, fresh veggies are cheaper than frozen stuff. It just needs a little bit more time in preparing them, and you have to... The convenience of having frozen food is great. I've got frozen veggies in my freezer. That's fine. I use them occasionally, but fresh food is so much better for us. Cut out the salt. Now, there's two ways of cutting out the salt. You can either go cold turkey and just suck it up, or you can do it bit by bit, or you can replace it with herbal salts. Now, if you go online, there are lots of recipes for herbal salts which don't have any salt in them, and they're good. If you want to go cold turkey with it, just cut it out, and if you can last it for 48 hours, your taste buds in your tongue reset themselves. It's the same thing with sugar, if you can cut out sugar as well. Your taste buds will reset, and when you put salt or sugar back into your food, you'll think it's horrible. So if you want to do that, go cold turkey. I don't use salt in my cooking at home. I very rarely use salt. My husband is one of those people that whenever we have a steak, he smothers the steak with salt like snow. And I just have to turn a blind eye. So he does have good blood pressure. So swap the sugar, same thing. If you want to try other sweetener sort of thing rather than cut out the sugar altogether. And soft drinks are a real trap. So, and go fresh, as it said before. Okay, stay active. Now, that doesn't mean that you've got to get ready for the Masters Games or anything like that. It means you be sensible about your energy output. Now, there are two people up the back there who are embarrassing me. They run marathons all the time. It's incredible. If I run to the bus, I have a heart attack. So you look at your lifestyle and you see how you can improve your cardiac output in a way. And you just need to raise your heart rate. If it's normally around 80 to 90, if you can raise it up to about 120, doing moderate exercise. Just look at what you do. We got a dog. And so I walk the dog in the morning, my husband walks it at night. We had the fittest dog in Clayfield, mind you, but it's great because the dog is forcing us to walk. And and when she dies, it's going to be terrible. You won't want to walk anymore. So, but look at yourself. Look at what you do. If you're going up in a skyscraper that's got a lift somewhere, get out the lift at the floor below and walk up one floor. Or if you can use the steps, or you can have the option of doing that sort of thing rather than driving your car or something like that. Just look at your own lifestyle. You yourself are the best person to look at it. 30 minutes a day, if you can. So, and drink alcohol only in moderation.
Can you go back to the previous screen?
Back to the previous one? Oh, no, too far. No, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Cool. Okay. And they say that one regular drink a day is fine. I personally don't drink at all. They're all high sugar. And that's the thing with processed food too. We talk about eating fresh food. Manufacturers don't produce their processed food for your health. They produce it to make their money. And if something on the label says low salt, read the label and you can guarantee that it will have either high sugar or high fat. If it says low fat, it'll be high salt or high sugar. They will adjust one of those to be able to make it palatable so that you will buy it. So read the labels on processed food and be smoke-free. Now, fortunately, smoking has almost become an anathema to people these days. But it's not just smoking, the direct smoking, it's also secondhand smoke. If you are in the vicinity of somebody else who smokes a lot, then be careful of what you breathe in as well. Because what smoking does, it puts a layer of tar on the inside of our lungs. Our lungs are like sponges. There's lots and lots of little tiny bubbles all joined together. And the smoke puts a layer of tar on the inside, and the oxygen that we breathe in cannot get through, as it normally should, into the bloodstream on the other side of that little tiny membrane. And so our bloodstream has a lower oxygen level than it should have. So just be careful if you are ever around other people who are heavy smokers. There is a program put out by the Queensland Government called My Health for Life. There are a couple of flyers about it over on my table in the hall, if you want to grab it. It's one of those where you phone up the government and you sign up for it, and they will look at your lifestyle and set up a program that will help you to increase your exercise, to monitor your health and so on. It's very good. And a registered nurse will phone you regularly just to see how you are going in that program. It's entirely voluntary. It's entirely self-driven. So if you're interested in it, then do follow up on that. So what will you do now? Yes. Do you want me to go back? No age range. So, okay. I'm not sure of the absolute, all the finer details of it, but they're certainly very helpful. So, much more so than the government usually is. So, again, know your stroke risk. Now, when you came in, hopefully, some of you might have come in late, you can receive a little handout. One is a bookmark that's got the FAST acronym on it, and the other is a form for you to fill out yourself to work out your own stroke risk. If you can tick more than two or three of those things on that form, then that's what your stroke risk is. I can tick about four. I'm older, my daughter has had a stroke, I am overweight, for my bone structure, and I can't think what the fourth one is, but anyway, so you just need to be aware of your risk, and that will tell you what it is. You can take your steps, go and see a GP if you haven't had a blood test lately, and encourage other people to have a stroke-safe speaker. Now, also, on the desk over there, there is a booklet called Transient Ischemic Attack. So if you're interested in knowing more about TIAs, there's a few of those. I have quite a few of this booklet, Living with Atrial Fibrillation, because that applies to us in this age range very much. So there's a fridge magnets over there. There are also these wallet cards. It comes with two of them so that you can tear one off, put it in your purse or your wallet, and give one to a friend so that they know what it is as well. And finally, there is one of these over there with a pink sticker on it. I am very happy to come and visit any of your church groups or community groups to talk to your group about being stroke safe. If you want to take one of these flyers, the pink sticker's got my name and my phone number on it. It says Brisbane North because I am the representative for Brisbane North for the Stroke Foundation, but I will go anywhere. I told somebody today I'd go to Toowoomba if they needed it, so, but I am happy to come anywhere. But if you do decide to book a stroke safe speaker and you want me to come, you'll need to ask for me particularly. Otherwise, you'll get somebody from the area, and I'm very happy to come and speak to your groups. That's the end of my presentations, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming.